You're listening to a Toll Network production, putting heroes on trial because someone has to. Tired of the discourse and writer fandom? Looking for something to put that bounce in your step and a bee in your bonnet? Then look no further than the Uncommon Cast RX. Active ingredients: Ayla, Amit, Gomez Q, Claire, Midgerion, Professor White, Sono, the Imposter. Side effects may include Heiseiitis, Show of Fever, Helper Robotophobia, and an English Lilt. Welcome to this episode of Uncommon Cast RX. The subject is Kamen Rider Gaim episodes 37 and 38. Today it is just me, Amit, and this fellow over here.
I'm Aleph, also known as Needs More Aleph on Twitter, and generally the loud guy who is the whiniest of all of the contributors on this show.
And that's okay, because we need everybody to do their own part, just
yep.
Like in Sailor Moon. Sorry.
No, look, I don't know what Sailor, you know, being the whiny guy who's very nitpicky is, but I will be that Sailor Scout.
I'm just going to say Uranus, but I don't know if that's actually accurate.
It's, that sounds good, yeah.
It seemed like the funniest one at the time.
I'll be Sailor Uranus, no problem. Boy, that sounds just extra dirty.
Yeah, it does. Like, it's almost, never mind, it's almost an offer. Anyway, let's...
Yeah, exactly, it's filthy, filthy.
Yes, let's move on.
Moving on, yes.
To episode 37 of Gaim, which is the movie plug, which I'm going to come out and say, not terrible.
Interesting. I actually disagree. Like, okay, maybe not terrible, but I was just like, this is not doing a good job making me want to see the movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, honestly, it made me indifferent towards the movie. I was just glad it wasn't terrible. Like, especially the ending. Made it seem like the course of the movie happened while Kaito was over there.
Yes.
And then, so it's like, why? Like, why should I see this if it's removed from his memories and not important, right?
Exactly. You have throughout the entire just structure of the show, they just said, oh, by the way, the movie doesn't matter. You should go see it, but, oh, well, that's a ringing endorsement, isn't it?
Yeah. But, I mean, there were cool things. Like,
oh,
the freaking grasshopper, or, I think it was maybe a locust invest. Locust invest, yeah.
Yeah, either way, it's hard not to see it as like an electric blue black RX, and I adore it. I want that thing to come back all the time. That should take the place of Shadow Moon in all the crossover movies from here on in.
Hey, I'd be cool with that. Yeah, I was actually just thinking I want it to come back in the show, but if it comes back in other things, if they're, I mean, because they do that sort of thing.
Well, I mean,
then,
that's what
15's
deal is, right?
Yeah, basically.
They can just, you know, swap out his belt every time. He'll be, he'll have a drive driver for the next one. So, what the hell? Sure, do it.
Yeah. Wow. I don't even want to talk about that.
we'll skip over it.
Hold on, but speaking of Black RX, influences, man, that Trideron only, I mean, it's called Trideron. That's just you
add
a T,
Trideron,
and
yep.
Then it looks like Trideron. Like, it's pretty darn close. Anyway.
Yeah, no. Well, and look, I mean, if you're gonna draw from something black and black RX, you could do worse.
Oh, yeah, but I just hope, anytime somebody mentions black or black RX associated with their show, I,
well, yeah, your feelers
expect
go up.
More. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you're pretending on from something that's really good, you have to be really good. And you could be forgiven for thinking that was optional. In a lot of the ones where it's like, well, in Gaim, yes, you know, we really wanted to pull a lot from early Heisei. Okay, where is it? Well, we took in this element and this element and this element. Yeah, but early Heisei was also really good.
Yeah, well.
But, you know, that's, I can be hard on Gaim. It's unfair,
yeah.
Maybe.
Well, I don't know about that. but anyway, let's move through. So, you know, Deus Ex Sagara shows up, and he's in his Bedouin getup, and I just gotta wonder, what is that?
You know, I just think that they just tried to figure the most mysterious-looking thing they could do, so that when Bandai handed the outline of this episode to Toei, they just put in a little thing and said, oh, yeah, and put something mysterious in over here so the kids will be interested. Because, like, I don't get, well, like you say, what is even with Sagara's weird, hooded, Middle East-inspired thing? It looks neat, but it doesn't...
It's more like a giant turtleneck than a hood, but yeah, I know what you're saying. It's ridiculous. You know, in Forza, actually, there's a very interesting set of identity curiosities. Excuse me. It's my my Fize belt going off. Anyway, if you want to see a show that has an interesting, like, dual or more identity individual in it, you should definitely check out Forza just for that.
You should check out Forza anyway.
Yeah, you should. So, anyway, there's another, you know, earlier show that has done it better, and we have to compare it to the shows that we've seen because that's what Kamen Rider is.
You know, if you put the Kamen Rider in the title, you are inviting it. Like, you know, if you are the person writing Superman 600, you have to be okay with the fact that that issue is going to be compared with the previous 600, because that's how this works.
Yeah, true. Okay, you know, Kaito's super overconfident in this, and again, I'm stating, what is with that? That seems like a weakness to me, you know, we can insert carping about his weak character construction here. You know, but what's the dealio with the, I gotta back up real fast. Yeah, insert that argument here because I don't want to go through it again. You've heard it all before, and if you haven't, I think he's a very weakly constructed character, and I don't understand why. But it's weird because, his strengthening is supposed to be happening in this episode, but
he is the protagonist of this episode, which I think is a strength of the episode, insofar as it's nice to get someone else being the star for a little.
Yeah, I would agree with you there, but it's weird that, Gaim in Zenith Arms is, like, randomly summoned from an alternate dimension, and, like, it's super vague what that is, of course, and then... I don't know, it just kind of... It was super odd. It really was a contrivance because they're trying to tie in the movie, and they made it about soccer, so...
why not?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say.
Well, no, I think I see where you're going. You know, why are we focusing on this thing, which, admittingly, I think is a good way to pay lip service to at least trying to develop Kaito a little. I mean, that's a good idea, but... Well, like you say, we're talking about the football-themed movie. Maybe we start there. You know, just kick him straight into that. Don't bring in his fight with Kota, unless, of course, that's some sort of really cheap foreshadowing to him eventually fighting Kota, which seems inevitable, and it's nice to have that touched on. But and again, like they're using a fight. A fight scene to help someone develop their character, and it's, you know, nice to see that they understand the basics of how to do a superhero-themed show. You know, where the dudes in costumes fighting is how you develop the scene, and how you develop the characters, because when you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Right. Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, well...
just some people handle that a lot better than others.
Yes.
But we've said that a lot, so.
Yeah.
You know, as I was watching him, get kicked into that dimension, I was thinking that I wish I could slip into a parallel dimension where when I tune into the show, it's, like a really good version of what was here.
No, I couldn't get with that.
Yeah. So. Going back to Kaito and his weak character, he's a crudely constructed. Yeah, it really is. He's a crudely constructed facsimile of a character, but that allows for cool moments like him feigning amnesia to Zack and Pecco in order to get information on just what exactly is going on in this other world. And I did think that was really cool.
And it's just one of those things where I just keep going back, why are we even mentioning the actual original cast? I mean, they're setting up a situation which must, again, by the show's own internal logic, matter not at all. Way to get me excited, guys. Why not just have a prequel episode for the movie-verse or something? This extra contrived setup of... I mean, it's like you say, it is a good character moment for him to say, I don't know what's going on. hey guys, I have amnesia. Oh no, you have amnesia. And then just, you know, explain what's going on with this movie. But yeah, it seems like a lot of extra work, is what I'm saying.
No, I get that. And, you know, it became apparent that he slipped into the movie universe. And the only benefit I have to that, because I like your idea of just doing a prequel to the movie in an episode and just say, like, look, here it is, accept it. It's the same actors and they still transform and stuff. Yeah, you know what? It did, because they didn't really try to interweave Kikaider's plot with the rest of the show.
No, it's just like, oh, and now he's going to hang out with Kikaider for an episode and it won't matter, but it made me want to see Kikaider.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, yeah, similarly to you, I think this is off-putting, but I thought it was a little bit clever because we got to see Kaito in a different set of circumstances, and it was so worth it to me to see him failing, specifically
trying
at trying
to kick
the
ball.
Yeah, that was great. It was a great moment, especially because he couldn't get away from it. He just had to admit, yeah, I suck.
Yeah, which, again, if it weren't for the fact that I was absolutely sure that it's not going to have any effect. I mean, it might be foreshadowing for later plot developments. I doubt it, but it might be. But if I thought it would have an effect on the rest of the show, that moment would be one of my favorites in the series, I think. Because here's him just failing, just out and out failing, admitting he's failing, and asking for help.
Yeah, I don't think that even something as substantial as the kind of character development we're potentially getting with him for the future of the show, and there's a lot of caveats there because it could just be out the window.
Yeah.
It isn't happening in the show proper. It's happening in this weird, crossover universe. And once again, it gets erased. So is he going to remember his dream from the end of the episode and be like, oh yeah, I should be, you know, not so much a jerk. I kind of doubt it. But anyway, getting back into the movie verse, I thought it was really interesting them making Orin a lightning rod, and following that. The logical conclusion that Team Charmant is created because he steps in and was a professional soccer player in France. Mm. That's what it seems like. And he grabs all these soccer whelps and coalesces them around him. So that worked for me.
Yeah, I'm right with you. And look, anytime that dude gets to do an actual thing, I mean, it's the smallest criteria for a thing that makes me happy, but I'm just like, oh, you got to do a thing. Good on you, bro.
Yeah, but it's ironic because he doesn't get to have that growth and development and become this leader-type person in the show, which we see extensively in the next episode.
Oh, God, so frustrating.
But we'll get to that when we do. I'm going to tinge blue here. I say F that to the arcing banana sideline offsides kick. Like, that is something I really hate in the shonification of sports and anime and manga, etc. And maybe I should just accept it or stay away from this genre, but that kind of stuff really bothers me when they're displaying or portraying things like that.
And, you know, I can get with that in, like, 90% of the situations, but I feel like if you're going to have superheroes in your sports story, which they're doing in this movie and this prequel episode, you might as well give them silly power moves because they're not going to be fighting with swords. Of course, then the normal footballers show up and they have, like, fire kicks, and I at that point I just kind of go, well, sure, why not? It's a superhero show. Y'all are superheroes. Little love for the home team. Just go with it.
Yeah. I couldn't really hate that moment. So, or those moments. So I just accepted them.
Yeah.
Unlike you, I did enjoy the split story. Just because it seemed like it was going at a decent pace, and there wasn't too much lingering here or anywhere in the show. Really,
I'll give you that. I will give you that. It was over quickly.
Right. And something I really liked was Gaku Sano finally getting to display all his athleticism that we saw with him, like, doing backflips on stage and stuff by doing a, wall run backflip. That was really cool. And getting to do a lot of out-of-suit fighting. So kudos to him.
Yeah, and, you know, for all the problems I have with the series, and you know I've got them, I have to say that underutilizing what this guy and honestly most of the cast is capable of, it's got to be near the top of the list of just, why did you mess up so bad, guys? Because he's just a like you say, he's really athletic. He can do a lot of really impressive stuff. He's wall running, he's jumping, he's flipping in place. But most of the plot has just had him just sitting by the river, thinking about what it all means, man.
And chasing that locust as much as he can.
Yeah, well, look, anything with more of that locust, that thing was beautiful.
Yeah, it really was. So, I did not much more to say on that point. Let's see. Okay, I had to wonder a little bit, did Kota succeed? Well, no. We talked about the footballers being superheroes, and it was kind of a really weird choice that he went back. This is like the reverse of Kiva, where Kiva does really cool stuff. We're like, we didn't beat that monster, or we almost beat it, or we beat it this time. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, watch who's dealing with it in the future. This is, you know, split dimension, and Kota just kind of fails to keep shooting it with his arrow. Then it goes over and gets hit by soccer balls until it's dead, basically.
Yeah, almost. Pretty much. And, you know, look, we got to leave a lot of, you know, bits of the outcome in question so the people will go see the movie, which I guess is the desired effect. And again, they did give some love to the home team, and Japan's in the World Cup, so, you know, let's root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame, because it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the soccer game. That's how soccer works, right?
Yeah, exactly. Except for they call it football. And well, you do it on the pitch, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
And you can only use your left hand.
I've heard that. Yeah. Unless you're right-handed, left-handed, in which case you have to use your right hand.
Exactly.
Okay, so I gotta wonder, what is the lesson here for Kaido? Try harder, be himself all the time? If it's either of those things, which it may not be either because he forgot it all, I have to say no thanks.
Look, the only thing I learned from it is that friends don't let friends have solutions based on tie-in movies.
Okay.
Okay, I'm just going to go off on a quick tangent here, if that's all right.
Oh, please do.
Okay, so this episode, it was pure fluff with no real consequence, right? Kaito doesn't remember that he was in the movie, Kota fought a critter and just punched his way through it on his way to a major plot point from the previous and next episode. So in the service of trying to meet the series halfway, I have to ask, is it possible that all these tie-ins up till now that Urobuchi and the rest of the team have had to contend with are all, you know, they're trying to just fit their very certain story beats around them so that they aren't, you know, having to interrupt the main plot with whatever the movie is. Like, oh no, well here is the cliffhanger for when Kota's gonna see what the ultimate state of Helheim Forest is. Oh no, it's a city. And then we have a Kikaider episode just right in there. And I have to wonder if maybe that's part of the reason why the show's often felt as if it's doing lots of filler episodes and stretching out some plot points and then really just fast-forwarding on others. And I don't know, the unintegrated tie-ins compared to the integrated one here really stick out like a sore thumb. And again, this is me being as charitable as I can be, given the strong start of Gaim and actually, these last few episodes having some moments of resurging competence. I just have to wonder if marketing is involved here and the rest of the staff just isn't able to compensate for it very well.
That's possible. I almost wonder, though, if it would be better to go the other way and have it be a completely, like you suggested, the prequel thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's totally out of, that would totally be interrupting the flow of the story. However, you could just do an extended recap if you felt you had to keep the momentum when we get to episode 38, or have it somehow better integrated into the episode.
Yeah.
You write around the fact that, you know, we've been gone for an extra week, let's make sure everybody remembers these things.
That's what I would think would be a much better solution.
Yeah, I mean, with this, you get not great things happening, so.
Not great at all. Again, that's me trying to meet the show halfway. I'm not saying that excuses anything. I'm just saying, okay, well, maybe this is why I've had so many complaints and why the last 15 episodes have been kind of crap.
Yeah, I get it, but let's move on to 38, because that wasn't bad either.
No.
I'm liking... It's funny that there's been such a long gap. It's called The Professor Returns, and it's funny that there's been such a long gap that Priyam has been gone, or out of suit, or whatever. And I understand they had to work around the actor, but just... I feel like with this episode specifically, we're really getting back into things, and...
Yeah.
I did watch 37 and 38 almost back-to-back, and I didn't feel a big lag. It felt pretty seamless
going from
38, for me anyway.
It felt a little chunkier to me, and I would have just tossed 37 out, but still, I will give 37 that it at least kept in mind a lot of the stuff that's going to come up in 38.
Right, yeah, and the whole, you know, interrupting Koja's search for Michizane, I guess, you know, it works, but it could have been better. But anyway,
exactly.
Moving on to 38. Redaway's enjoyment of Michi's haunting is understandable. I'm not quite there, but I think it's a good thing that the show's doing this, though it has its pros and cons. For example, he does, in fact, have a heart and isn't crazy, clinically or by, like, lay standards. You know, but what does that mean for Michizane's future? Is he going to repent? And if he is, I don't have faith in the show that it's going to do it well.
Well, no.
Yeah.
I'm right with you, but again, I'm happy that, you know, they're trying to show that you don't go from zero to fratricide without some severe issues in the middle. And you don't feel guilty about a thing you're happy to have done, so that's kind of cool. I mean, it's, again, as like the biggest Michi fanboy, at least that I know, which, you know, very small circle of people I know who even watch Kamen Rider, but, you know, it's just nice to see him having that extra kind of depth, and I just want to give some special love to the guy playing Takatora, because he's very much, he's not playing Takatora himself, he's playing the Takatora that Michi sees, a.k.a.
Yes.
The one that Michi learned all the bad stuff from, as Takatora was saying in the episode where Michi murdered him. Like, that's well done, guy.
Yeah, that's really great on the actor's part, and that was a really good way to write it also. So
yes.
I have to give kudos for that.
Yeah, look, again, like, it's not that I hate the show. It's for the sake of hating it. I hate it because I know it can be this, and it has spent a lot of time not being this.
Yeah, which is way unfortunate.
It really is.
All right, so Ryuma comes along in shorts,
and a
camo
and a
shorts. Yeah, and a blazer, a long one, with, you know, tails or whatever, and taunts the beat writers, offering to get them into Yggdrasil to save the hostages. And I think the subtext there is, you know, Akira, but he doesn't say it.
No.
But he sure gets in Koda's face about it, so. I agree with Minato's suspicion here. He said they have more to lose than he does, but I bet he has a lot to gain by getting into Yggdrasil Tower.
Look, and I'm just hoping that when the inevitable betrayal happens, because it's gonna happen, they're not gonna play it off like we're supposed to be surprised. And I have to say, with this scene, like, here is another dude whose athleticism has been severely wasted in the show up till now. I had no idea this dude could move that well.
Yeah, I was really impressed by his athleticism and how he was moving around, and it made me think, oh, well, I hope the conceit is that he was off training or, you know, fighting Inves or whatever to get himself beefed up so that he can, or maybe even, like, he's done something secretly techie, hacking his belt or whatever to, like, enter God mode. That would be cool.
Well, I mean, in the series, they've been implying that your belt will do different things to your body. So, like, maybe he just has been getting all sorts of high-level fruits and just upgrading himself or something. I hope it becomes a plot point. I'm right with you in hoping that it becomes a plot point.
Yeah, that would be really great. I like the idea of maybe him eating fruit and altering his body. I mean, because we know, obviously, Kota has that happening to him, too.
Yep.
But it was irritating that he wanted more data. And it's like, why bring that up? It's almost, I almost think the actor was kind of like, I don't know, trolling the audience with his performance, the delivery of that line, because he's like, oh yeah, I need me some more data. And
yeah.
Like, no, you don't, jackass.
look, like, I think I honestly think it's just that when they wrote the character, he just has one thing he wants. He just wants the one thing, and that is more data for reasons we don't know. And no one knows, and no one cares to define. And I'm just going to let him have it, because trying to figure it out before his final plan is revealed, because he has a final plan, it's going to be revealed. Again, it's just like he's going to betray them. It's a thing you just know. And, you know, worrying about it too much before it happens is just going to make me frustrated.
Yeah. It really is. Let's see. Okay, so there's this really weird scene where Michi's with the overlords.
Yeah.
And they're having a disagreement, I guess. And it almost seems to me like he thinks everybody should think the same. Because he's shocked that the overlords are having, like, a policy discussion.
Yeah.
How should we move forward on, you know, murdering these humans or not murdering them?
It is a really weird thing. And one of those things where I sort of feel like the kid should be saying something like, you sound just like Kota and Kaito, always arguing about what's right. Just act. You know, so... But, and I guess if we want to, we can chalk that up to the lack of clarity due to his haunting, but it's just weird even having him in the scene. He's really superfluous. And it just brings up a lot of questions that, like, the show doesn't need any more times for us to be going like, okay, well, why the heck is this happening this way? But, you know, that's me.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. It's interesting to me that now that Michizane's gone, that the, trio of characters that are hanging out together has become my Jerkface and Kota.
That's actually a very good point.
Oh, I mean Kaito. It's interesting. Did you want to make a point and then I'll continue?
No, I mean, I was just saying that's a good point because, yeah, we really have just gone down to just three characters on each side because Junoichi and Oren are just, you know, they're off doing things because the plot won't murder them, thankfully, but also won't give them a thing to do.
Yeah, so that, you know, puts the three other characters into, like, not a sharp contrast. I wrote that the other day, and it's in my head now. It puts a focus on them.
Yes.
That's what I wanted to say. And it's cool because, you know, we get to see more of Mai and her optimism being so strong and, you know, Kaito admitting that. She, you know, she's really a necessary part of the show, and I wish her role was more prominent. I actually like that they want to save Michi. But they should try really hard to wreck his belt and then lock him up somewhere, somehow.
Agreed on both counts there. Because in these last couple, Mai really feels like she's coming into her own, but I need her to do some more directly plot-relevant things, preferably ones that do not involve getting some dude to do a thing. Like, I know there's a lot of Ryuki comparisons, but if she's supposed to be Yui, I'm just saying we could actually give her more to do in the actual plot than Yui had. I love Yui's story in Ryuki, but she just kind of got dragged along, and that's not the same as being a character with direct agency to me.
Yeah, I can't speak to that, but...
There is a
difference, so...
Yeah.
Anyway, I like that they keep addressing Kaito's wound, but I want to know why it's so slow.
Yeah.
Seems like a plot contrivance.
It really does. Like, I'm figuring for the moment we'll just hand wave it away as a side effect of the belt, because that's the only thing I could think of. Like, just as Kota's losing his humanity as expressed in his lack of interest in food, Kaito's lack of, you know, slowly leeching humanity is being shown through his body being more adaptable to Helheim, maybe? Maybe that'll be a plot point? Look, if they're setting up a plot point, I want to give them credit, but if they're not, I want it on record that if they're not, heck with them. I have very strong words about lingering this much on a thing that won't matter. If it matters,
yeah.
Great.
No, that's a good point. It really shouldn't take up more plot. Like, it's everything should be purposeful in the show.
Yes.
I mean, if it was a comedy, everything would, you know, be towards making it more funny. So you can kind of forgive certain weird quirks and say, oh, that's part of the shtick, but it's supposed to be serious. So,
yeah. Anyway.
I gotta say, Michi is male privilege incarnate. It seems like in some of these scenes, it's really weird and gross. And then there's like a depiction of an abusive relationship with Michi, Mai, and Pecco, and that was really disturbing. It was
really.
I read it as like, I'm gonna beat the hell out of your kid unless you come with me now.
Yeah, it's hard not to read it that way. And again, you know, fondness for the character aside, because again, I like me a good villain, and I really have enjoyed this kid. Wow, that dude is a form account and a fedora away from becoming a, quote, nice guy, end quote. I mean, I like that it's being used to cement his supervillain and all, but yikes, that's just skin-crawling. Like, I guess it's good that, you know, you're telling the little kids, oh, by the way, anyone who acts like this is not your friend.
Yeah. It's
but...
It's really rough. This is kind of like the Kikaider rape scene that we talked about.
Exactly.
It's funny because I felt differently about that, but this is, like, really objectionable and hard to watch.
I'm right with you.
And look back, listeners, at the Kikaider episode for reference, because I'm not going to belabor the point, but I'm not defending a near rape scene.
There's
more context to it than that, so please don't. Please look into it. Anyway, let's move on from there. I really don't get why Kota is holding back in fighting Michizane. Isn't the best plan to take away his destructive faculties and then reason with him, since he's like a wild ass of a man,
yes,
to quote the Bible?
He really is.
And I know this is a bit redundant for me to say, but, you know, come on.
No, and like, I agree with you, but in this case, I'm tempted to let it pass because, honestly, having shown him to be the bad guy, we gotta get that first real fight between our hero and Michi out of the way. I mean, look, that makes two episodes in recent memory where the fight is the result of a character arc and not just vague character motivations being stated out loud. I mean, again, I agree that they should be, you know, go for the belt, take away his destructive potential, and then talk with him, because that's how Kamen Rider Forze would do it. And if it's good enough for Forze, it's good enough for these chumps.
That's right.
But...
And he's... Gentaro's still in high school!
Yeah!
Man... Sorry.
No, well, Gentaro is just a superlatively decent person. Kota is a guy who's fumbling towards that. And again, like, I am right with you in saying that's what I think the character should have done. But in the drama sense, I can see why they went this way. I'm not in love with it, but I get it.
Yeah, I suppose, and you bring up a good counterpoint on that, I think. So this fight has a display of Kota's overlord power creeping into it, like things kind of froze and rose, were levitated or whatever. So
yeah.
That was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I was wondering what that was supposed to be, because I kept thinking, that armor didn't used to come with telekinetic powers.
Yeah, well, I think it's got to be a key into his true nature or his changing nature.
That's a very good call.
Thank you. What did you think about the kind of cheap way the flags got taken off of Triumph by having them get shot with the sonic arrow? Notice that?
Yeah, it was really weird, but I think it's one of those things where as Kaito's going to be saying a little later, this is the strength of the one who has cast aside all doubts, and I have to use that tone of voice because that's really the only way you can say that sort of line. Because
I think
that's the only way that cheap shot works, and it's one of those good visual shorthands and metaphors, because Michizane is just catching him completely off guard, do you see, with the force of his attack, and disarming him, it's almost like this is a metaphor for a thing.
Yeah, I guess. It's an annoying metaphor, though. It's funny, because what it read, to, like, all of what you said is probably true,
mm.
and I get it that he's plot strong now.
Yes.
You know, and Kaito gives his little explanation for it, but I get it. I don't like it, and I don't like that it was displayed with the flag specifically, because I feel like the flags are like a bandoid, yeah, a plex or bandai design choice
mm.
that Toei's just like, oh, how are we going to deal with these freaking shoulder flags in this scene? The director was like, I don't want these on right now. I know it's not in the script. I know we already... let's just take a little bit of time to get these freaking flags off of him as quickly as possible. And sorry, it's going to run up the budget. You can, you know, take it out of my check.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like to me.
No, I can get with that. And I'm right with you again on the plot strength, because it's BS is what it is. And basically just because they need Michi to be buffer, but they don't have time to design, develop, market a new toy for the kid yet.
I guess. Just, I don't know, give him a special fruit or something
in. Plot strength is nonsense. It is some hot nonsense. I'm not arguing on that point. It's, you know, again, it's a thing where from a total drama, you know, drama structure level, I see where they're going, but then down here in, you know, my nerdy, nitpicky heart, I'm just like, that doesn't... Why does that work this way? That's not fair. Again, it's the problem with the nebulous rules that we haven't actually had to discuss for a little, because the last few have been really good. But that, you know, the power levels are really nebulous, and it's kind of nonsense.
Yeah. All right, so finally, my last thing to say, really, is Kaito is right to be wary of Mitsuzane's extreme behavior, but Kota is also in the right to want to save him. They are effectively, and pleasingly to me at least, representing different points of view, but I'd like to see that executed properly by seeing them both move a little towards the middle of, you know, from their opinions.
Mm. Well, and I don't even know that there's necessarily even a middle ground to be found. Yeah, I think they're just both really right. They should absolutely be wary of someone with that kind of power, especially since Michi is a volcano base away from being a Bond villain, but bringing him back from that edge is still the ideal. You know, beat the crap out of the kid, then we'll all go have a beer or a soda or whatever, or, you know, drink of choice, and just sit the kid down and say, do you know why we had to beat you down, kid? Because I was trying to kill half the planet. Yeah, you see, that's not okay. You know that, right?
But it's better than 6 out of 7 of the planet, right?
We aren't talking about your brother, Michi. We're talking about, yeah, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
But, you know, again, like, I'm right with you, though, that, like, I get where their characters are coming from. I know what they want. And I know how they're going to get it. And the stakes have been established. And I don't know, I'm sort of freaking out because suddenly we're in a whole new world.
Where Gaim isn't consistently terrible.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like, look, like it can be inconsistently terrible. I would take inconsistently terrible, or,
you know,
even
I would take that too.
Yeah. Again, like maybe that 3 out of 5. If it could get up to a 3 out of 5, you know, it could drop down to 1 every now and again for a scene or two. If it goes back up to 3 overall, it's great.
I totally agree. Sorry, I listened to everything you said, but honestly, I was a tiny bit distracted because I was moving around things on my Frozen parody.
Man, that thing got long.
Yeah.
I just had to wait for a sec.
It's all planned out, so anyway.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I've come up with a Frozen parody. It's parodying The First Time in Forever. From the song, or from the Disney movie Frozen.
You know, that's the two siblings talking bit, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, look, look, the world needs a Frozen parody that isn't another Let It Go.
I totally agree with that, actually. Not completely the reason I did it, but it's a big contributor.
Yeah, well, you know, like, yeah.
So, anyway, I tracked down some karaoke music, so look forward to hearing this song at some point in the future. I really would like to get it out when this is released, but we'll see about that.
Oh.
Anyway, I'll just Well, never mind. I won't spoil any of it, but hopefully it comes out. I was going to do something for Kiva, too, a while back, but then...
Oh, nice. What was the Kiva song?
What was the Kiva song?
Yeah.
Like, oh, it was a brand new song. It was...
Oh, all new.
We were making fun of King for how he looks.
How, you mean like he looks like Morrissey?
Yeah. Yes.
A nightmare version of Morrissey? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so he's trying way too hard. He was going to sound kind of like David Bowie with a, I was going to say a rock edge, but like a metal-y edge, and his recording was going to be coming straight from hell. So it was going to be a little garbled, but it didn't end up coming through. Anyway, this frozen thing should happen, though, and hopefully it'll actually be enjoyable. So anyway, yeah, Aleph, thank you for spending your time with me. It was fun discussing these episodes.
As
and,
ever.
You know, we're hopeful, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Look, again, like, the problem has never been that there's not a lot of good here. The problem has been that they haven't been using it well.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that sentiment.
But now they're using it better, so...
Yeah, it seems like it should be good, although... Oh, wait, never mind, that's another show. I was going to say, isn't the next episode a swimsuit episode? But that's not us. That's the awful Persona 4, the golden animation, if you're familiar at all. You should check that out, because it's pretty terrible. Or, you know, maybe it's not. I don't know. Go to trialofheroes.com and look at the post there, if you're interested at all, and you can, you know, argue with the commenter, or the poster, and see what you think. So, anyway, we're getting out of here. You'll get our Twitter information, as well as our inboxes, at the end, along with some writer funk. So, you know, kick that dragon road, and we'll talk to you next time.
Have fun, everybody. Spay and neuter your pets.
If you experience any complications, would like to make a testimonial, or have any questions, send your correspondence to uncommoncastrx@gmail.com or contact us via Twitter @needsmorealif, @gomezq, @illustratorclaire, @nejirayon, @professorwhat, @sonoyourface, @wheresmyhenshin. On behalf of everyone, this is Amit saying we hope you have enjoyed this dose of the cure for the Common Writer Show. I run the show's Twitter feed @UncommonRx, as well as the Toll Network feed @TrialofHeroes, where you can keep up to date on all our shows, including Moonspeak, a bi-monthly Sailor Moon Crystal show discussing the ongoing series. Visit trialofheroes.wordpress.com to get it all.